From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Michelle Norris. Tough scrutiny on Capitol Hill today for the Bush administration's plan to prop up Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Members of the Senate Banking Committee peppered the Treasury Secretary and the Federal Reserve Chairman about how much risk the plan entails for taxpayers. NPR's John Yudsty reports.
The Treasury's plan to restore confidence in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac clearly alarmed Senator Jim Bunning. The Republican from Kentucky suggested it gave him a sort of Twilight Zone moment.
When I picked up my newspaper yesterday, I thought I woke up in France. But no, it turned out it was socialism here in the United States of America. The Treasury Secretary is now asking for a blank check to buy as much Fannie and Freddie debt or equity as he wants.
Essentially, Bunning is correct, but Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson told him that while he did want unlimited authority, he had no plans to use it.
There is no proposal today to inject federal funds in these companies at this time.
Paulson said the Treasury Secretary needs the authority to use an unlimited amount of money to lend to Fannie and Freddie or buy their stock in order to convince investors that Fannie and Freddie remain viable. But why not set some limits, senators wanted to know. After all, Fannie and Freddie have trillions of dollars of exposure. Paulson said limits would be tested by the markets.
If you've got a squirt gun in your pocket, you may have to take it out. If you've got a bazooka and people know you've got it, you may not have to take it out. You're not likely to take it out. By having something that is unspecified, it will increase confidence, and by increasing confidence, it will greatly reduce the likelihood it will ever be used.
Bunning was unconvinced and argued investors were unconvinced, too.
The market has reacted to your plan, Secretary Paulson, by driving down Fannie Mae shares 26% today, right now, and Freddie Mac's are down 29%.
Paulson responded that the real test of confidence in the plan was not share prices, but the willingness of companies to lend money to Fannie and Freddie at reasonable rates. And he pointed out that yesterday, Freddie Mac borrowed $3 billion in the credit markets at interest rates only slightly above those paid by the government. Bunning was by far the most skeptical senator. He said he would do everything he could to block the plan, suggesting he would filibuster it. That led to this comment to Paulson from Democrat Charles Schumer of New York.
Which then means we need 60 votes, so we have to do this in a bipartisan way. And we just need your commitment and the president's that they're going to do everything they can to get this done and done quickly.
Originally, today's hearing had been scheduled to get the semiannual report on the economy from Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke. He did that in abbreviated form before the discussion about Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac began. Bernanke said the Fed was forecasting continued very sluggish growth in the economy. He said the danger of slower growth and higher inflation had both increased, posing a big challenge for Fed policymakers. And he said rising oil prices and falling home prices remain at the heart of the country's economic problems.
I think were it to happen that there would become a general view that the housing situation had stabilized, I think you would see actually a very strong bounce back in the economy and the financial markets, and it's the uncertainty about when that happens that remains a problem.
For that reason, Bernanke told the senators, it is crucial to pass the legislation supporting Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, along with other housing rescue measures. John Idstey, NPR News, Washington.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Robert Siegel. Wall Street and Main Street are nervously watching banks today. Investors have been spooked by failing bank stocks, and customers are wondering if their money is safe. Lines of them outside the failed IndyMac Bank for a second straight day certainly didn't help. IndyMac was taken over by the FDIC, and in a moment we'll talk with the head of the FDIC about how much of your money is and isn't insured by the federal government. First, to NPR's Chris Arnold, who reports on how likely it is that more banks could fail.
One place that you can see firsthand the problems facing banks around the country is at the trading floor at a company called DebtX in Boston. The company is sort of like a stock exchange, except instead of stocks, it helps banks sell off loans, good, bad, and ugly ones, so that they can raise money.
These guys down here are the ones who are talking to the bank clients, trying to help them figure out what loans they might be able to move at a price that would work.
Kingsley Greenland is DebtX's CEO. All the problems the banks are facing mean big business for him. He's helped hundreds of banks sell off billions of dollars worth of loans over the past year.
It's busier than we've ever seen it. Yeah, I mean, I think you can reasonably say that at least the volume that we're selling is at least 200% more than this time last year.
Greenland says a lot of regional banks made the same mistake. They couldn't make as much money on things like credit cards, so they looked to make money from real estate. Then the housing market tanked, and lots of construction projects that banks financed went bad. Now, to clean up their books, the banks have to sell off those loans and take a loss.
For many of those, the value in a marketplace right now could be 50 cents on the original dollar. Some instances even less if they're in very remote areas.
Beyond housing, falling values of commercial properties like shopping malls can force banks to raise more money. That's hard to do when investors are dumping your stock and running in the other direction. Greenland says a lot of banks are getting squeezed.
Yeah, I'm very concerned about it. I don't see a massive SNL-type debacle, but it's not going to be easy. It's going to be painful.
But just how many banks are in such serious trouble that they're going to go under is hard to know.
Still in the midst of a giant guessing game.
Chris Thornburg is a forecaster with Beacon Economics. He says there are just too many question marks: how bad the housing crunch will be, what the broader economy will do, and which banks are still heavily exposed to bad loans. He says the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, actually has a list of troubled banks that it's keeping an eye on. There are more than 90 banks on the list right now, but it turns out it's a secret list.
The problem here is this, here's a situation in which information is both an enemy and a friend. The FDIC recognizes that if they point at a bank and say, well, maybe them, they can create a full-fledged panic and bring down even healthy institutions.
But not knowing which banks are most in trouble is also helping to create this panic across the whole industry. At one point today, the stock of the Ohio-based bank National City was down more than 75% on the year. Washington Mutual and Wachovia have also been falling sharply. But some analysts think investors are getting too scared.
My sense of it is that it's not a system-wide problem.
Brian Bethune is an economist with Global Insight. He says more banks will fail over the next couple of years, but he thinks most banks are on much more solid footing than, say, IndyMac Bank, which just went bust a few days ago.
Well, IndyMac was a specialized mortgage lender and therefore had a lot of concentration in the mortgage market. Large regional banks, they're not anywhere near as exposed.
Regulators are trying to calm fears. They say most banks will be fine and most people are covered by FDIC insurance. The main concern for most people is that the ongoing problems in the banking system could make it harder to borrow money, and that could keep dragging down the economy. Chris Arnold, NPR News.
President Bush addressed the topic of Fannie and Freddie today at a White House news conference. The president said the two companies' stock will remain in private hands. And he echoed Ben Bernanke, pushing Congress to pass legislation that would give the two companies access to an unlimited credit line. In general, Mr. Bush expressed his confidence in the U.S. economy. NPR's Don Gagne reports from the White House.
This is not the way a president wants to begin a session with reporters.
It's been a difficult time for many American families who are coping with declining housing values and high gasoline prices.
But this president, looking at his final 6 months in office, also wanted to highlight what good he could find.
Yet despite the challenges we face, our economy has demonstrated remarkable resilience. While the unemployment rate has risen, it remains at 5.5%, which is still low by historical standards.
One thing the White House did this year to give the economy a boost was to push a tax rebate to give money back to consumers. Checks for $1,200 were sent this spring to those filing jointly. Individuals got $600, but the impact hasn't been as big as hoped. Latest retail sales reports show an increase of just 0.1% for June, less than expected. The president was defensive when asked if he still insists the nation is not headed into recession.
All I can tell you is we grew in the first quarter. I remember holding a press conference here, and that same question came about, assuming that we weren't going to grow. But we showed growth. It's not the growth we'd like. We'd like stronger growth.
The president was asked if he'd consider yet another economic stimulus package before he leaves office. He didn't rule it out, but he said he'd wait to see the full effects of the tax rebates. Also at the news conference, he resumed his push for oil exploration offshore on the outer continental shelf. He said he recognizes that such exploration won't have any immediate impact on gasoline prices, and he wouldn't predict when or if prices might begin to come down.
And I heard somebody say, well, that's going to take 7 years. Well, if we'd have done it 7 years ago, we'd have be having a different conversation today. I'm not suggesting we'd have completely created a, you know, changed the dynamics in the world. But it certainly would have been we'd have been using more of our own oil and sending less money overseas.
And the president expressed frustration that Congress has not given its permission for drilling in places like Alaska's Arctic National Wildlife Refuge. Then the president was asked why he hasn't done more, using the megaphone of the presidency to ask the American public to conserve energy more aggressively. The reporter is Mark Smith of the Associated Press.
Why have you not, sir, called on Americans to drive less and to turn down the thermostat?
They're smart enough to figure out whether they're going to drive less or not. I mean, you know, it's interesting what the price of gasoline has done is it caused people to drive less. That's why they want smaller cars. They want to conserve. But the consumer's plenty bright, Mark.
The president then added,
and you know, people can figure out where they need to drive more or less. They can balance their own checkbooks.
The news conference included a few questions about Iraq and Afghanistan, but the economy dominated. It's a topic that has become just as difficult for the president as the wars. He described himself again as an optimist, but he is also watching his term wind down, with little time for a real turnaround on any of these fronts before he turns the keys over to his successor. Don Gagne, NPR News, the White House.
The run on the bank, that image is a powerful one. Today, President Bush reached for a memory of his own as he tried to reassure bank customers.
I happened to witness a bank run in Midland, Texas one time. I'll never forget the guy standing in the bank lobby saying, your deposits are good. We got you insured. You don't have to worry about it if you got less than $100,000 in the bank. The problem was people didn't hear.
And it's been much the same this week outside of IndyMac. As we've mentioned, many people have been lining up outside that bank's branches to withdraw their savings. They walked away with most of their money because IndyMac was insured by the FDIC.
The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation was started in 1933 after the collapse of thousands of banks. I spoke earlier today with the chairman of the FDIC, Sheila Bair. She insists that Americans should not worry about the fate of their deposits.
Their insured deposits are absolutely safe. We've been in existence for 75 years. We're actually celebrating our 75th anniversary this year. And no insured depositor has ever lost a penny of insured deposits. We have a very strong track record on that, which will continue.
Their insured deposits, that's up to a specific amount.
Right. The general rule, as you've indicated, is $100,000 per institution. You can get an additional $250,000 in an IRA account. It's also possible to get a lot more than that basic $100,000, depending on how your accounts are structured. For instance, if you have an account in your name alone, you get $100,000 coverage for that. If you have a joint account with your spouse, you would get another $100,000 for that. And the same would be for your spouse, too. So that would be a total of $400,000 in coverage right there. It's also possible with a revocable trust to get $100,000 per beneficiary. So I do think it's important for those who have more than $100,000, if your accounts are appropriately structured, you would still probably be below the insured deposit limits. But if you have any questions, just please call us or go talk to your bank and make sure.
So people who have up to $100,000 in a regular account,
right,
with the exception of retirement accounts and a few other exceptions, that money is insured. What
that
happens
is, yes,
beyond that point? What happens to the roughly 10,000 people at IndyMac who had deposits in excess of $100,000?
The FDIC board has already approved an immediate dividend of 50%, so they will right now have access to all their insured money plus an additional 50% of their uninsured. And we are going to try to move in a very timely way to sell this institution, take it back into the private market, and then when we get the proceeds from that sale, we will be in a position to make additional payments, additional dividend payments to uninsured depositors. They may well still take some loss. Historically, generally, uninsured depositors on the uninsured portion of their funds will take a loss of 10, 15, sometimes 20%. But it's still, it's most of that money the uninsured will get back, and certainly all of the all of the insured is completely safe, and most of the uninsured they will get back as well.
With so many banks showing weakness from the housing crisis, could we see the kind of collapses that we saw during the late 80s and early 90s that kept the FDIC so busy during the savings and loan crisis?
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I think, you know, comparing those days to today really helps put things in context. We've had five bank failures this year. There were over 2,000 during the S&L debacle. I think it peaked in 1987. We closed 534 banks. So, you know, the five banks that we've closed, really, it's so small in comparison to what was going on then.
But looking back to the savings and loan crisis, as you noted, there was a torrent of bank closures in that period, but it began with a trickle.
Well, that is true, and it progressed over a multi-year period, and so I would not make predictions. My personal view is based on the information we have now. They're still, even the more dire predictions are not approaching anywhere what we saw during the S&L days. So I don't make predictions, but I would observe it, even the private analysts that have some of the more alarming projections or more. You know, I think I saw one 300 over 3 years. Again, that's nothing compared to what we were doing. I'm not saying that would happen. I'm not sure. I would be surprised, frankly, but that's then nothing compared to what we were seeing during the S&L days.
Sheila Bair is chairman of the FDIC, or the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
You are so welcome. Thank you.